We've been studying from the book of Ruth for the last few weeks on Sunday morning. Ruth's life takes place during the same period of time as the Judges, a Bible class series we just started this morning here in the auditorium today. Ruth occasionally and her mother-in-law Naomi do some things that we think, I don't believe I'd have done it quite like that. They choose to do the best they can based on what they understand of the will of God in any given moment. You know, a person could do a whole lot worse than that. Do the best you can based on what you understand about the will of God every moment. Chapter 3 is one of those occasions where we're inclined to say, I don't believe I'd have done it quite like that. At the same time, there are some principles, I think, about how we approach our Redeemer that we see exemplified in Ruth's situation, the advice that she gets from her mother-in-law, Naomi, and the way that she gives herself to doing things that she believes will ultimately provide for her own family, her own life, but also would be in harmony with what God's will for her life was. Now, you and I know that in the end, everything turns out great. Not only is Ruth taken care of, she's able to honor her mother-in-law Naomi and provide for her as well. Ultimately, she becomes one link in a chain between Abraham and the Messiah and the blessings that God has promised ever since Genesis chapter 12, and really, to some degree, blessings that God has promised ever since Genesis chapter 3. But here's this moment. As you remember from chapter 1, things have not been good, particularly for Naomi. She has gone to live among the Moabites as a result of the famine in the land. Anytime I have to relocate because there's been a famine in my land, already things are not off to a great start. She goes to Moab. There she loses her husband and both sons. So there are these three women, a mother-in-law and two daughters-in-law, and they're trying to decide what to do. She asks, as you'll recall, Orpah and Ruth to go ahead and go on back to their families and try to start over again. They're young. Perhaps they would be able to start afresh. And she would go back to her kinsmen in the area of Judea. And there she would try to do whatever she could. Her summation of her life experience up to that time is perhaps best seen in a name change that she picks for herself, at least at that moment. Rather than Naomi, call me Mara. I'm bitter. I'm hurt. But even through that, she continues to look to God and try to submit her will to His. And she provides over and over and over again for Ruth, this young woman who did not come from the same background of seeing God at work that Naomi does, provides good advice for her about how to behave herself. And clearly, Ruth is a woman of purity and honor and continues to behave that way throughout. As chapter 3 opens, the way that we have the chapters numbered in our Bibles, we see Naomi still trying to figure out a way to bring resolution to what is a difficult situation. In chapter 2, we were introduced to Boaz, who is an honorable man who has taken notice of Ruth as she has gone to glean in his fields. And not only has he allowed her to do that, but he has given her special notice. He wants to try to help her. He is obviously aware of her life situation because in chapter 2, he comments on what he does for her as being a recognition of the way that she has treated her mother-in-law. You've been so good to all those around you, but especially to Naomi. I want to be good to you. And so they've come to know one another, and he says, don't you even bother going and gleaning anybody else's field. I want you to come here. And he instructs his servants to take notice of her and to make sure that she's taken care of. So she has found in him a sympathetic person, someone who is aware of her circumstance. And what later on Naomi tells Ruth is, above and beyond all of that, he is a redeemer. Now, in order to understand something about what that would have meant to Naomi and Ruth, we perhaps ought to think a little bit about the Old Testament concept of levirate marriage. This is not a term that we use very frequently, but most of us are somewhat aware of it. The idea of a levirate marriage, as we see in Deuteronomy chapter 25, verses 5 through 10, is that it is an attempt to preserve the family line of every Israelite. Now, this is important to some degree, I suppose, just because it gives people a sense of self. But there's more to it than that, because after all, property stays in family lines. And you'll recall that every seventh year, property goes back to the original owners, and in the Jubilee year, seven sevens in terms of years, in that year, everything kind of gets reinstated. And so records are important, whose family owns pieces of property and whose family is obligated to certain debt. All those kinds of things takes place in that way. And so levirate marriage is a way of extending one's family line that can actually take place after his own death. The way that it works, as many of you will know, is that if a man marries a woman and they are married for a period of time, but no children are produced to that marriage and the man's life is cut short, then it is the obligation of his nearest relative, specifically the man's brother, to take this man's wife as his own and to produce a child. The child would be biologically, obviously, the child of the second man, the second brother, but legally and covenantally, the child would be the child of the first man. I think that's the best way to explain Luke's version and Matthew's version of Jesus' genealogies, because they list two different grandfathers for Jesus, physical grandfathers of Jesus, Jacob and Eli. And the resolution of that, if I understand it correctly, is that Jesus was the biological child, as Luke would have recorded it, of Eli, but he was the legal or covenant child of Jacob. Levirate marriage functions to make sure that two things happen. First of all, this family line is continued, and then second of all, a widow is taken care of. And this is really important, as I think I mentioned in the first lesson that I did on Ruth chapter 1. They don't have all the social service structures in place at that time to be able to take care of people. Further, women had few options available to themselves in terms of being able to provide support for them and their families. And so levirate marriage provided for both of these kinds of things. Now, that, is, as it's described in Deuteronomy chapter 25, really describes a brother's obligation. But by the time we get to Ruth's time, at least, it appears that this has been extended to other relatives. And the one who would take it upon himself to make sure that someone is indeed provided for is referred to as a kinsman redeemer, somebody who will take this on. Remember, at this time, marriage was not just about, you know, getting engaged one day to a guy like I was when Dana and I got married, who basically had nothing. I had nothing to offer except a little bit of hope, and not much of that. But at that time, marriage came along with some financial obligations. Gifts were exchanged and all of that kind of thing. So choosing to take a woman on is taking on her entire life, and you need to make sure that you were willing to put up the necessary financial resources to make sure that you could do that. That's the scenario that we see described here in Ruth chapter 3 in verses 9 and 12. So, Naomi realizes that Boaz is in her family line and therefore is in position to be able to step in and make this right and take care of Ruth, and of course, by extension, to take care of Naomi and the rest of the family who are present there. So he is a kinsman redeemer. So as chapter 3 opens up, Naomi, her mother-in-law, said to her, "My daughter, should I not seek rest for you that it should be well with you? Is Boaz not our relative with whose young women you were? See, he's winnowing barley tonight in the threshing floor." So we have somebody here, somebody who's in the position to be able to take care of us. Now, what we don't find out till later is that they actually had more than one somebody, because Boaz is a kinsman redeemer, but he is apparently not the closest relative to them. There's somebody else who could have stepped up. But Naomi realizes, first of all, there is a legal opportunity here because Boaz is in the position to do that. But she has seen in him a willingness to provide care. And that's something that you really look for in a redeemer if you're in that situation, right? Not merely somebody who is obligated to do it, but somebody who wants to do it. As a matter of fact, back to Deuteronomy chapter 5, you see the mechanism in place. If a person who is legally obligated to provide that service is unwilling to do so, and the resolution there involves, among other things, a woman going and spitting in the guy's face for his unwillingness to accept that place of honor for God's desires and intentions for those marriages. So Naomi sees in Boaz not somebody who could do this, but somebody who is inclined to be the kind of person that would provide that redemption to make things right in that relationship. So, what is it that we can get from this text, from this story, that help us to understand the way that one approaches a Redeemer? And I admit to you, I'm going to spiritualize this because we have a Redeemer. I don't know anybody in this room right now who is looking for somebody to remarry, somebody from among one of their husband's relatives. I'm not sure my wife wants to marry any of my relatives. I can hardly blame her. But what's the application for us? Why are we studying this? Well, because we have a Redeemer, somebody who has stepped up and expressed willingness to take us in. It is no accident, I don't believe, that the Bible refers to the church as the bride of Christ. There is a sense in which He is our kinsman Redeemer. So what can we learn from Ruth and Naomi about how to approach our Redeemer? The first thing that I think that we can see here is that, like Ruth, we need to look to the right person. There are an awful lot of people who would be willing in one way or another to engage us such that somebody is benefited from that. And it may appear that maybe we would be benefited from that. But be careful. There are an awful lot of folks out there who perhaps would have their own interests in mind and not ours, who would not deliver everything that we might need. Look here in Ruth chapter 3 again, verses 1 and 2. Naomi says to Ruth, "My daughter, should I not seek rest for you that it may be well with you? Is Boaz not our relative with whose young women you are? See, he's winnowing barley tonight at the threshing floor." Naomi provides a recognition that there is somebody out there who would do right by Ruth. Now, it's implicit in this text, but if you read chapter 2, you can't miss it. I might read it in this way. Naomi says to Ruth, "My daughter, should I not seek rest for you, maybe well. Is not Boaz also our relative?" He's already demonstrated that he's a good man, that he's willing to try to look out for you. But good news, he is also our relative. Naomi would have known, and it's difficult to tell even exactly how much Ruth would have fully understood at this time, but Naomi knew that it was a big deal that Ruth find someone who was a kinsman redeemer, somebody who would be willing to step up and do that, somebody who had both the heart for that choice, but also the obligation to do that. So Naomi talks to Ruth and says, "There's somebody here that you need to come to, somebody who can count on to take care of you." In John chapter 6, you'll recall that Jesus' ministry, while Jesus is very, very popular among so many of the people, there were periods of time in His ministry when He lost followers. And in John chapter 6, as a result of some of His challenging teachings, many of His disciples begin to leave. Jesus turns to His closest disciples, His apostles and others, and said, basically, "You're going to leave too?" And you will recall Peter's response to that, "Lord, to whom shall we go? You have the words of life. You are our Redeemer," otherwise phrased. "We know we can count on you. We don't know that we can count on anybody else. You are the one person who has exactly what we need." Again, there are many substitutes, many who would call out to us, many other voices that we would be able to hear that would say, "I've got just what you want." May we be like Peter and the apostles, may we be like Ruth and say, "Where else would we go? Only our Redeemer has what we need." Boaz is situated not only in terms of his proximity, but in terms of his ability to be able to take on this responsibility. He has shown a disposition of compassion. And Naomi says, "He's also a Redeemer. He's the person we've been looking for." Naomi perhaps has done her homework. She is aware of this. She's looking for resolution. And Boaz is the Redeemer that they sought. Second of all, when we approach our Redeemer, we need to prepare appropriately. In this case, as Naomi talks to Ruth, she says, "Wash therefore," verse 3, "and anoint yourself, put on your cloak, and go down to the threshing floor." You've seen this man every day, but this is going to be different. You're coming to him with an awareness of what he can do and how important he is in the doing of that, acknowledging how much you need him to step up and provide this service for you. You don't just come to a situation like that without adequately preparing. Now, we could talk an awful lot about things like purity, wash yourself. We could talk about those kinds of things that would be a part of us getting ready. But really, what I have in mind here and what I think I see in this is simply acknowledging that when we come to the One, when we come to our Redeemer, we need to understand the gravity of that moment and behave similarly. We do this naturally in so many cases. As a matter of fact, I'm guessing that if Naomi had talked to Ruth and said, you need to go down and talk to Boaz about this, she would have known that this was a big deal and that she needed to get ready for it. Things that are important to us in life, we get ready for. Approaching our Redeemer is one of those things. Now, it's tricky for us as Christians because I don't want to give the impression that what we do so that our Redeemer will be favorably disposed to us. Certainly that's not the case. He has already demonstrated his favorable disposition toward us. He wants to help us. Boaz had already demonstrated that he was inclined to be good to Ruth. But it's still the case that when we come before our God, we want to acknowledge how much we need him, and we want to acknowledge our desire to step into that situation with the highest level of preparation and thoughtfulness. Ruth does those kinds of things because she understands the significance of this moment. Wash, anoint yourself, put on your cloak, go down to the threshing floor, but not make yourself known to the man yet. So both preparation and to some degree, in no kind of a deceptive sort of way, strategy, thinking about the right time to do the things that she was going to do. You and I also need to think about how we approach our Redeemer. The third thing I think we see here in Ruth is that she comes to him with humility. This is where it gets just a little bit ticklish. Naomi's advice to Ruth is this. You look out, and he's been out there working, and he's threshing, and then when he gets to the end of his day, and he's had something to eat and drink, and he's feeling good, and he's going to go lay down for the night, you watch and see where he goes. And then you go down there and lay down by him. Now, there's some ambiguity here in this phrase, uncover his feet and lie down there. Some perhaps have tried to make an awful lot of this. The Bible does indeed use euphemisms. But here's what I think we can know pretty well. You down there, and you express your vulnerability and need for him by lying at his feet. Lie right there by him. He's laying there by a stalk of threshed grain. And you just come there and you just right there and lay there through the night and wait. When we need God, and we always do, we must be willing to allow him to be God. We must be willing to humble ourselves and submit ourselves to him. We must acknowledge our vulnerability and weakness. You see, in this situation, Ruth really has nothing to offer. Has nothing to offer. And you think to yourself, well, yeah, but wait a minute, she is a woman after all. And she is a young woman, apparently, and so maybe this is about romance. Marriage at that time was almost never about romance. It was about getting various kinds of needs negotiated and arranging for two families to come together, and Naomi has nothing to offer in that regard. Boaz is already in the position to receive or to get the one thing that maybe Naomi did have to offer. Naomi goes there with an attitude of humility and places herself at his disposition. When we approach our Redeemer, we must do the same. 1 Peter chapter 5 and verse 6 tells us to humble ourselves before the mighty hand of God, and he will lift us up in due time. It's really the only thing that we've got is a willingness to submit to Him and to acknowledge His greatness and our weakness. And as we approach our Redeemer, this is how we should do it. Naomi says, basically, when he realizes you're there, he's going to address the situation. You listen to his instruction. You do what he tells you to do. When he wakes up, he will tell you. Ruth's words in this text are to Naomi, not Boaz. But they are characteristic of her general attitude. She says to Naomi, "All that you say, I will do." Later on in this chapter, as Boaz does indeed wake up, finds this woman laying there nearby, she asks him, "Spread your wings over me." The word wings there can be translated garments. So one or the other, the idea is the same. "I need you to take care of me. I need you to provide for me. I am exposed." And at that point, Boaz says, "May you be blessed by the Lord because you have made this kindness greater than the first," verse 10. "You've not gone after young men, whether rich or poor. You've come to me." I believe he viewed it as a compliment that she recognized that he would take care of her. This was a compliment not to his wealth and prosperity, but to his character. And so he reacts by saying, "Here's what we're going to do. You lay right here right now. I'm going to get you out of here early in the morning so that your character is not tarnished in any way. And then you go back." And he provided her with more food and things of that nature to make sure that she's taken care of. She goes back to Naomi and rehearses all this with Naomi. She listened. She was ready to hear what he had to say. In John chapter 10, Jesus uses a metaphor to describe his relationship with his people. He says, "I'm like a shepherd, you're like sheep, and the sheep know the shepherd's voice, and they heed what he says." It's different than when somebody else speaks. In our world, there are many voices competing for our attention. Listen to his voice. Heed his instruction when you approach your Redeemer. Finally, as we approach our Redeemer, as did Ruth, we must trust Him to act for our good. This is indeed a tremendous display of trust. Naomi says, "This man that you have only met recently, you go and you make yourself completely vulnerable before him with the expectation that he's going to step up and do what's right." In this case, of course, it paid off. There are many men who could not have been depended upon to do the right thing in a circumstance like that. She believed in her Redeemer, and she trusted Him to act for her good. You and I, as well, have a Redeemer whom we can trust to act for our good, someone who will do the right thing. It is hard still sometimes, isn't it? We read things we find in the Scripture, and, you know, God always is faithful. He always does the right thing. He always provides what's needed when people submit to Him and trust Him. But still, it is hard for us to be trusting in that way. It's hard for us to believe that we can be completely forthright, completely honest with God, that we can fully depend on Him, that we can indeed cast all of our cares on Him because He cares for us. It's hard to do that. It's hard to trust someone else to act for our good. Sometimes it's even hard to trust God to do that. So we take matters into our own hands. We try to script everything in life in such a way that we can use our talents and our abilities or the resources that are at our immediate disposal to make sure things turn out exactly like we had planned for them to turn out. And when we do that, we withhold from ourselves an opportunity to see God at work, an opportunity to see Him provide for us. Naomi tells Ruth, when she comes back and reports everything that's happened in chapter 3 and verse 18, "Wait, my daughter." That's pretty tough advice right there, right? Pretty tough when I hear it from somebody. "Wait. Wait until you learn how the matter turns out," Naomi says, For the man will not rest, but he will settle the matter today. In Boaz's case, what that meant was going to the more immediate kinsman redeemer, asking him if he was interested in fulfilling that obligation and doing whatever it would have taken, I'm convinced, to persuade that other fellow not to do that. I got it. Don't you worry about it. I don't know what that conversation looked like. But I do know that Naomi knew from what she had seen in Boaz that they could depend on him. That not only would he do this, but he would do it with a level of immediacy and urgency because he realized the depth of the need and the desire that Ruth had to allow him to take care of her. I wonder how many times, if the Lord were talking to us today, or if someone from the Lord were talking to us about our life circumstances, I wonder how many times that person might say, wait. Trust. He's going to take care of this. You can count on Him. You can count on your Redeemer. It's difficult in us for some reason. It's difficult for some reason for us because so much of what God does for us is in the past tense. It's what He did. Our Redeemer already came and He already did these things and we already can see what He did. And that's great, but our life circumstances continue to unfold, and there's still some uncertainty day by day about exactly how we ought to proceed. It's in those circumstances perhaps we need to have somebody say, wait. Wait. Lamentations chapter 3. Lamentations is a sad book. So it's ironic, isn't it, that in that sad book we find some of the greatest words of hope. They're words that we sing frequently, right? The steadfast love of the Lord never ceases. His mercies shall never come to an end. He's new every morning. Great is your faithfulness. The Lord is my portion, says my soul. Therefore, I will hope in Him. Jeremiah, at a time of struggle and difficulty, still believed in the midst of his tears that God would provide, that he could approach life with hope and not despair because he trusted in God. Ruth shows us an example of someone who is willing to allow God to work rather than seizing all of these matters and placing them in his own hands. She could have connived and come up with some kind of scheme to entrap Boaz, but she doesn't. She simply comes to him and says, "You see where I am. I'm completely vulnerable. I cannot handle this on my own. Would you spread your wings over me and take care of me?" Can I suggest that there are some of us in this room today who need to make a request of God like that? Would this sound familiar to anybody in this room? Lord, you see me for what I am. Open, vulnerable, needy, incapable of providing the things that I need the most. Could you say today, Lord, my Redeemer, spread your wings over me and provide for me and take care of me. Do those things for me which I cannot do for myself. Is there somebody in this room right now who needs to ask the Lord, our Redeemer, for something like that? If you do, I hope that you will. Whatever you're facing, maybe what you're facing is something that is just a part of your life. It's you're already a Christian. You already know God's on your side, but maybe you just want to call out to Him to acknowledge a great need that you have at this moment. Do that. Maybe you have sin in your life that has discouraged you. Maybe you have struggles that are too big for you. You know it. Ask God. Ask His people, just as Naomi asked Boaz to help with the things that she believed God would want to do also for her, so we can ask those around us to help with the things we're struggling with. It may be that you are not a part of the bride of Christ, the church. It's not something you join. It's something that God adds you to. When you are in relationship with Him, you are in relationship with His people. Have you been willing to lean on Him? Have you been willing to confess your own weakness and need? Have you been willing to purpose to turn from a life of sin instead to see Him cleanse you from that sin and provide direction for the rest of your life? Do you need to do that today? Whatever your need is, I urge you to approach your Redeemer as Ruth approached hers today so that He can reach out and cover you with His wings. If you need to make some kind of step in His direction, do that as we stand and sing together.
Sweet is the song I'm singing today.